there's more warming, a lot more warming out west.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
The Great American West is a popular place to live. Cities and suburbs there have grown by 10% in just the last 8 years, but can it last? The February issue of National Geographic features an article not on exotic nature far away, but about the possible end of the Southwest population boom. Author Robert Kunzig writes about the drying of the West. We have him on the line now. Hello, Robert.
Hello.
Well, what is happening to the water supply of the Colorado Basin?
Well, for the past 8 years, there has been a record drought in the Colorado River Basin, the worst drought that has been seen since stream flow records have been kept for the past century. And the levels of the two main reservoirs there, Lake Powell behind the Glen Canyon Dam and Lake Mead behind the Hoover Dam near Las Vegas, are below 50% of capacity. In 1999, when the drought started, they were essentially full. And so they've just been going down. Last year was not the worst year was 2002, when the Colorado flow was only about a quarter of its long-term average. So it's really gotten people's attention, and water managers around the region are very nervous and have recently negotiated, after years of trying to prepare themselves for how to deal with what they thought were going to be water surpluses, they've had to negotiate a deal for how to deal with shortages like they've never seen before.
This seems like a really big story, which I haven't heard a lot about. How did you encounter it?
Well, I've been working for the past few years on a book on climate, which is called Fixing Climate. It is coming out in just a couple of months for our Strauss. And I was looking, and it's with a co-author, a well-known climate scientist called Wally Broker of Columbia University. And we were looking for things to focus on that we think are really going to be the main the main impacts of global warming, are the ones that are most likely to get people moving. And I got interested in drought in the American West that way. And all, especially my co-author's specialty is paleoclimate, and so there's been an awful lot of work on the past climate variability of the American West, and that's one of the new developments that has gotten people worried about the future.
Is the drying of the West debatable? I mean, how sure are scientists and water experts that this is really happening?
Well, there's no debate about the current drought, and there is no debate either about what I was just talking about, the past. What people have come to realize in the past decade or so by studying tree rings and other records of past climate is that we have just lived through one of the wettest periods in climate history in the West, of going back over the past 1,000 or 1,500 years. The century in which the West was really settled and the population boom turns out to have been one of the wettest ones. And in particular, the moment in time when the Colorado River water was divided up, when the states signed a compact called the Colorado River Compact, that was in 1922, was really practically the wettest quarter century of the past millennium. If you look back further in the record, to the Middle Ages especially, there were mega droughts that lasted longer than anything we've seen and were also deeper and more severe than anything we've seen. There's no doubt about is that that we have been lucky. And so even if there were no global warming, we should expect for droughts to hit the West unlike any we've ever seen. Now, there is global warming, and the science lately has been moving towards a consensus on what the impacts of that are going to be, and it very likely is going to lead to further drying of the West. The future is less certain than the past, of course, but there was a paper in Science Magazine, a very influential paper just last year, that looked at all the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change forecasting models, big computer models developed around the planet and different laboratories by people working independently, and I looked at the ensemble of 19 models and found that 18 of them forecast serious drying between now and 2050.
Well, I wonder how consistent the drying pattern is. I mean, it's confusing, the global warming issue, for all of us. There have been great droughts in the American West before, as you point out, so we don't really need human-induced climate change as a cause. And the current drought was caused by a cooling of water, we think, in the eastern Pacific. So how do humans figure into that overall picture?
Well, you're quite right. Before I answer that, let me just say that when I've been saying the West, but really what I'm talking about is, especially when looking at the forecast for the future, is the Southwest. So I believe you're in Canada. The forecast is not at all the same for Canada as it is for Arizona and Southern California. Now, as for the Southwest, what the climate models say the impact of global warming should be on that area is it should lead to further drying, not just in the Southwest, but in general to the subtropical regions around the world, including the Mediterranean, in Europe, and Australia, in the other hemisphere. There are two reasons why those should get drier. Basically, the models show that regions that are already dry should get drier. And that's a kind of a, it sounds somewhat counterintuitive, but it's a result basically of more evaporation and precipitation happening as you warm up the planet. So there are these atmospheric circulation patterns that keep the deserts dry by transporting water vapor out of them towards the tropics and towards the northern, farther the polar latitude, closer to the poles, the mid-latitudes. Mm-hmm. Basically, in global warming, that transport is going to increase. So regions that are dry are going to get drier, and regions that are wet are going to get wet.
Well, so the American Southwest is in one of these bands of predicted drying.
It's right on the edge of it. That's where the second factor comes in. The models almost all show that these bands should be expanding north and southwards towards the poles. In other words, the subtropical climate bands will be moving poleward. And since the American Southwest is right now on the edge of it, with that effect, it'll be sort of plunged into the middle of it. So that explains why these models forecast a general drying in the Southwest. But it is a complicated business, and they don't they've over the past decade or so, they've been getting ever more fine-grained in their forecasts, but they're still not down to the level of being able to say, well, you know, the forecast for Western Colorado is definitely this. So there is still some uncertainty, but there has been a definite trend towards a consensus of less water flowing in Western rivers.
Well, surely a prolonged drought will create water wars between city dwellers and farmers wanting it for irrigation, or even struggles between big cities. Are planners already working on this?
Yes, they are to some extent. I would say, in general, the reality of global warming has not really set in. I would say water managers don't quite know yet how to deal with it. And because there is still some uncertainty, the forecast, it's really not sure how to respond. But they have been clobbered by the recent drought, and they are just trying to deal with that. And in that context, the seven states of the Colorado River Basin recently signed an agreement in December on what to do if there ever is just not enough water in Lake Mead behind Hoover Dam to satisfy the needs of California, Arizona, and Nevada, which are the downstream states. This has never happened before. In other words, the federal government, the Department of the Interior, which runs Hoover Dam, has never had to say, sorry, we can't release the water that you're entitled to because it's just not there. But they're now looking at that possibility, and they've allocated. They're saying, okay, who's going to get caught off first? Well, it's going to be Arizona because they basically got their slice of pie latest, and then Nevada, and finally California. But that's only for they've only really settled what'll happen with the first shortfall. If things get as bad as some of the models say it could get, well, they're going to have to talk some more.
We're talking with Robert Kunzig, the author of The Drying of the West, and it's published in the February 2008 issue of National Geographic. Well, Robert, if you had to pinpoint some endangered cities due to water shortages, which ones stand out?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure I would accept the term endangered cities. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, and I'm not sure that any of these, I'm not saying that cities are going to become depopulated, but where the boom in population might be threatened, well, the most directly threatened, I would say, is Las Vegas. Nevada gets essentially all its water from the Colorado River, Southern Nevada, which is where most of the people are in Nevada, which is where Las Vegas is. Las Vegas has been, its population has tripled since 1980, and it is still growing fast. It's over 2 million. The water manager I talked to says she fully expects it to go to 3 million. They are doing a lot to conserve water. They've actually, in recent years, been reducing their water use in spite of the growing population. I mean, they're paying people to rip up their lawns and plant desert plants. And
you know, this is what's always killed me about many of these cities. When you visit them, you see the sprinklers running nonstop to run lawns, which is totally opposite to what the natural growth would like to be. And you say Las Vegas has turned that around. I've heard they're paying people so much a square foot to rip out their lawns and put in things that can live there.
They were paying, as of last year, they were paying $2 a square foot, but only up to 1,500 square feet or anything. And just a little yesterday I was reading that they've changed the program. It's now $1.50 a square foot, but it's essentially unlimited. You can, in other words, they want people to start taking out big areas. And it is already against the law, as I understand it, to plant a new front lawn in Las Vegas. If you build a new house, you can't have a lawn. And this is, I ran into this in other, I talked to water managers in Phoenix and in Albuquerque. The conservation is happening in these places. I mean, I think the outlook is changing. The idea that you should, you know, move west from the east, as so many people have done, and plant the exact same things you grew back home in Ohio or in New York. That is, I think, falling out of style. They're making serious efforts, but as one of the people told me, you know, eventually growth catches up with you. You can't conserve your way out of a shortage that is driven by population increase.
Robert, can we talk for a minute about the trees and maybe the insects or fire? What's happening with the trees as this drying appears to continue?
Well, there's been in the Southwest, particularly, a major tree die-off covering several million acres, especially of pinyon pine. And it's ultimately caused by the drought. The drought may well favor the infestation by bark beetles, because it makes the trees more vulnerable and less able to repel the attack of the beetles. But ultimately, drought is the cause. The drought also favors forest fires. And since the 80s, there's been, Western U.S., there's been a very large increase in the area damaged by forest fires. So in Arizona, for instance, you have these very lovely ecosystems that are known as sky islands, because they're mountains that are sort of cool oases in a sea of desert. And as you climb up one of these mountains, I went to Tucson, which is, and if you go to the mountain just north of Tucson, Mount Lemmon, if you drive up from the Sonoran Desert, and you're surrounded by saguaro cactuses, and within less than an hour, you've climbed 7,000 feet, and at the top, you're in a cool pine forest, and you've traversed several distinct ecosystems along the way, and basically, those bands are moving up the slope, and the ones at the top are getting pinched off, and so they're on some of these islands. There are endemic species that have been sort of hanging out there since the Ice Age, and they are endangered.
And what role do melting glaciers or changed snowfall play in this water supply problem?
Glaciers, probably not so much in the United States, although that is a big issue, as I guess you know, in places like China and India, which get a lot of their water from the Himalayan glaciers. But it's the same thing, really. The United States, the western United States, the snowpack is essentially the biggest reservoir for water. So, and that's something that maybe people don't always fully grasp. I mean, it's only recently that the models have been converging on the idea that there will be less precipitation in the Southwest. But it's been clear for some time that it's going to get warmer. And it, even if the precipitation doesn't change, if it gets warmer, that means more precipitation will fall as rain rather than snow. It's just going to be too warm in the winter to snow. And what snow there is will melt sooner, and that is happening. It's been observed now for some time. And as that happens, it changes the flow of water in the stream, and in particular, basically, the snowpack acts as a reservoir that holds on to the water until the people really need it in the summer. If you move the maximum stream flow to earlier in the year by melting the snow, then the water is coming when you don't need it. And your reservoirs may even be full, and you have to release the water, which is sort of every water manager's nightmare out there, of having to let this water go unused down the river, you know. Merely by warming the climate, you can get an effective water shortage that way, even if the rain or the total amount of precipitation does not decrease. Just last week, in fact, there was a paper in Science magazine by Barnett of Scripps Institute of Oceanography and all, documenting that what they say are long-term trends in the over the past half century in the hydrology of the West, and linking it to global warming, saying basically pointing the finger at man-made global warming as the cause of a decrease in snowpack and a decrease.
And much of this will be covered in your upcoming book, will it? Can you tell us a little bit more about that book?
Well, the book is called Fixing Climate, and it's coming out in April from Farrar Straus. And my co-author is Wally Broker, who is a pioneering climate scientist of the Le Monde Dardy Observatory at Columbia University. He's the man who basically, if you've heard of the conveyor belt in the ocean that is linked to sudden climate change, he's the guy who, that's his theory. Mm-hmm. And so he's been a pioneer of the idea that climate in the past has been subject to rapid, abrupt change. And so a lot of the book is talking about the study of the Ice Age and the past climate in general and how we've come to understand. I mean, it's really, if I can back up just 1 second, if there are two things we've learned about climate that are of fundamental importance in the past 50 years, or the two most important things. One is that we're capable of changing it, and that we are, in fact, changing it by putting greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And the other is that climate is not a smoothly varying, stable system, but that on its own, naturally, it tends to go through abrupt shifts. And so you put those two together, and what it does is it tells you that, you know, global warming would be a serious challenge even if it comes at us smoothly and predictably, with the temperature slowly rising and ice slowly melting. But if, in fact, the climate has tipping points, to use the current buzzword, where it suddenly shifts into a new regime, that makes the whole thing a lot more dangerous. So the book is about the studies that document that reality, that climate does, in fact, shift abruptly. And then we talk about a couple of what we consider the two biggest challenges, which are basically having too much water where we don't want it and the sea level rising, and not enough water where we do want it, which is going to cause drought in places like these.
Okay, well, as we wrap up, is there a website you'd like to recommend?
Lamont Daugherty of Columbia University has a website where there's lots of them. In fact, there's a very good, one of the people I interviewed for the National Geographic article, one of these climate modelers, is at Lamont, and his name is Richard Seeger, and he has a very good website on drought in the West, S-E-A-G-E-R, at Lamont Daugherty. If you do a Google on Richard Seeger, you'll find it, and that gives lots of background.
Okay, well, we have been talking with Robert Kunzig, the author of Drying of the West, Find That Alarming and Important Story, in the February issue of National Geographic magazine. From the heart of San Francisco and going out to all America, this is Green 960 AM, the Radio EcoShock Show. In November 2006, the University of Arizona rounded up their top climate scientists for a series of public speeches. Today we're going to listen to a few excerpts from Jonathan Overpeck, the director for the study of planet Earth at the university, and a much-published scientist on climate research. He has projects going on in the Arctic, the American Southwest, and South America.
One of the new things that we've discovered using these better models is that, in contrast to 5, 10 years ago when we thought the winters would warm up most, we now think it'll be we'll have more warming in summer, which is unfortunately when we need it the least, right? So we're thinking even more warming in summer. So think lots of warming in the west, more in the summer. In terms of precipitation, we see another phenomena that we didn't see in the more crude models of yore, and that is we anticipate in the United States, more models than not are showing a drying out of the Southwest, less rainfall. And when you factor in those much warmer temperatures, you're gonna get a very unpleasant situation, which I'll show you in a minute. There will be parts of the United States, however, that probably will get more rainfall. So there'll be winners and losers, relatively speaking, although everyone warming up by 7-8 degrees, there probably is not really a winner. But there'll be bigger losers, let's put it that way, and we're sitting right in the middle of it here. Droughts and floods, we all think, in the science community, will be more likely. So on top of these average dry conditions, it's more likely we're going to get droughts, and that they might last longer in the future than they did in the past. We know naturally we can get droughts as long as 40 years. Our colleagues in the treeing lab here at the University of Arizona, the best, longest-standing treeing lab in the world, they've shown us that the droughts of 40 years can happen. What if we get those kinds of droughts superimposed on this globally warmed Earth? Life as we know it in the Southwest probably cannot function. So we have to change our ways, and we have to stop probably these big changes from occurring. It's changes in precipitation, increase in drought. These things are very real, and they're already happening, and that the scientific community is almost, who studies climate, is almost unanimous in saying that humans are causing at least a large part of this, if not almost all of it. If it wasn't for humans, we wouldn't be warming, for example. And that more climate change is a sure bet. How much more climate change? Well, that depends on what we want to do. We can put a lot of greenhouse gas pollution in the atmosphere and really cook this Earth like it's never been cooked before. Or we can just put a little more in and maybe save some of these bigger changes, the sea level rise and drying out of the West, keep it from happening. The other thing I really want you to notice on this, because we're going to come back to this, it's very significant. This is where scientists, I'd say, are getting blown away right now. It's 2005, and we're probably going to see more of this in the next few years. It's already 4 degrees warmer than just less than 50 years ago. 4 degrees. Remember that number. It's not, this is exactly the kind of pattern that was expected. You can see South America here, Africa, North America, Eurasia. We're getting more warming over land, and we're getting the most warming at high latitudes. Again, when I was in grad school 25 years ago, this is what scientists were saying was going to happen. It is now what is happening. And when people say that the Earth is going to warm up by X degrees, you all will know that if you live on land, like most people, you're going to warm up more than X degrees. And if you live at higher latitudes, you're going to warm up at a lot more than X degrees.
That was Dr. Jonathan Overpeck, lead climate scientist at the University of Arizona, speaking on October 24, 2006. You can download his full speech from the U of A website or from www.ecoshock.org.